All right, I'll just start. So this is my very first fancy computer talk, and I only entered the 21st century when it went back to the 19th century, as you can see. So I'm going to talk about some steps these collaborators and I are taking toward understanding holography and entropy for ADS flux compactifications. These are the same type of flux compactifications that Steve gave such a beautiful review of yesterday, in particular the KKLT models based on the GKP construction that he explained, gives a nice set of anti-de Sitter and de Sitter flux compactifications, which are compatible with low energy supersymmetric effective field theory. They exhibit Randall-Sundrum warping. Large extra dimensions are compatible with this framework. It really contains everything. There's another class of models that has none of the above, but that also might be kept in mind and has informed my thinking on the subject. So the most exciting thing we get from this is a set of stringy models of dark energy in the de Sitter case. And as Steve explained yesterday, one fixes the moduli by playing off forces involving fluxes and negative contributions from orientifolds in the moduli potential, for example, for the dilaton one gets a structure like what I've indicated here. Since Steve gave such a nice talk about it, I'm not going to go through too much more of the construction, except I'll review what we'll need for our story. Oops. So the existence of these vacua raises an obvious question of what, if any, is the holographic dual description of these flux compactifications, if there is one. In particular, these things are not obtained by any near horizon limit of brain constructions, the way that the ADS-CFT dual pairs that Juan found are. Nonetheless, there are good reasons to expect a dual, particularly in the ADS case, where we know that the ADS-CFT dictionary relating stringy Feynman diagrams in anti-de Sitter space to conformally invariant field theory correlators applies independent of any larger system from which, in the usual examples, we obtain the dual pair by an extreme limit. There's really nothing in the dictionary that presumes that that infinitely larger structure. In the ADS case, I think it's particularly compelling that these things deserve a field theory dual, and we should try and look for it. In the DS case, we really don't know, but there is a strong hint, I would say, from the entropy associated with the horizon that Gibbons and Hawking discussed, which, as for black holes, takes the form of the area, the curvature scale to the d minus 2 power in d dimensions in Planck units. And again, this long-distance general relativity calculation of entropy and other thermodynamic quantities suggests the possibility of a microphysical, statistical, mechanical accounting of those states, which may in turn produce or arise from a holographic dual description. There have been ideas about that, like the DS-CFT correspondence, which is was the subject of Finn's talk, and other more novel ideas. I think it's very much worth looking for such a thing. So my only attempt to connect really to the true honest cosmology side of this program is to say that, well, when we ask about the nature of dark energy in cosmology, we often define that to be, let's see what the equation of state or the scalar field potential looks like that we model the dark energy by. Perhaps we should, when we ask what is the nature of the dark energy, maybe these questions are equally important. Having said that, though, I don't have any good ideas for how answering this question would lead to any kind of observable, but it seems like a central aspect of the problem of understanding dark energy.
So, great question.
Yeah.
So, this is two simple questions. So, in both in the ADS case and the DS case, is it clear that this is going to be a local holographic? I mean, if you take away the brain picture or the brain derivation of the ADS-CFT, that's a local.
I think in the ADS case, these correlators become local at the boundary for the same reason that they do in the cases we know of from brain constructions, namely the warp factor goes to infinity and the effective tension of the string goes down, and the same UVIR connection is in place. So
good. Can you say anything like that with the
Zwicker? Not really.
So there's no reason to expect that the holographic dual is local.
Not a priori, no. Any other questions? I'm a bit focused on the technology here. Okay, so it is easier to do it this way. So, okay, so it's clear that we want such a thing, but we don't always get what we want. How do we find such dools? And we have a strategy that we've proposed and have been pursuing, which is based on the following simple point, that in our system, as in ordinary ADS-CFT, the degrees of freedom of the system, in particular the dual field theory of ADS-CFT dual pairs, become much more manifest when we deform the system to its Coulomb branch. So what I mean by more manifest is that on the gravity side of the system, we obtain, when we go out onto the Coulomb branch, a situation where the degrees of freedom of the theory are manifest on D-brains. So in the case of usual ADS-CFT, one can go out on the Coulomb branch, which from the field theory point of view corresponds to giving VEVs to the diagonal matrix elements of, let's say, the simple n equals 4 super Young-Mills case. And that corresponds to taking the ADS space, which is depicted here as a flux compactification down to ADS. That going out into the Coulomb branch introduces brain domain walls, which source the same type of flux that stabilizes the ADS space. So to the right of this picture is the part of the geometry that corresponds to the UV of the field theory, which is on the gravity side an ADS background stabilized by some flux quantum numbers Q. If we have a brain in the internal space which sources the same flux, it can cancel that flux on one side of it. And that's how it works when you go onto the Coulomb branch of ADS-CFT. The flux to the left of the brains in this picture is absent because of the contribution from the brains. And so there's nothing stabilizing the compact geometry anymore, and it collapses to zero and caps off the geometry. In fact, as I'll review later in the ADS5 times S5 case, things are particularly simple, and this is a smooth flat space solution inside here. But generally, we would expect that when you remove the flux on one side, the infrared side of the brains, that you would, having failed to flux stabilize the compactification, it's likely that it will also collapse and cap off in this manner.
Do the theories that you're interested in have Coulomb branches? Is that going to be clear?
So they won't be, there will be a potential on the branch, but we can still talk about the brain configurations that exist. They would, strictly speaking, be time-dependent solutions.
So you're going to get to specifics later, I guess?
I'm going to get to the specifics, and we're not done. This is a thing in progress, uh-huh. But I'll tell you the...
So you haven't talked about like an ADS for cross-Kolobi-Young.
That's a thing we're going to be interested in. Yeah. Sorry, I'm going pretty slowly through the motivation, but I want everyone to understand. So that's right. Okay, so this is, so everyone's clear on this. And in the De Sitter case, we can also go out onto the Coulomb branch, and there the solutions are always time dependent. And the Penrose diagram, the solutions take the form that I've drawn here, where the brains are matching between one De Sitter space and another. So these partial Penrose diagrams of each of the De Sitter spaces match on in this way. And I'll talk more about that later. So in each of these cases, when we make this deformation, the brains then are you know, evident, and there are degrees of freedom on them that are evident, and let's call that number of degrees of freedom n sub b, and this leads to the obvious set of questions that I've listed here. First of all, does this number of degrees of freedom on the brain account for the expected entropy of these backgrounds, which is the question I'll focus on today? Then if that works, so that the brain system represents a good measure of the degrees of freedom and therefore could tell us what the dual theory is, we can ask what is the content of that theory, and there are all sorts of tests we can make between the two. And finally, the main ultimately interesting question is the question of, is there such a dictionary in the De Sitter case, and if so, what is it? So as I say, I'm going to focus on question one today, and then I'll discuss some aspects of the second two questions. So again, I'm going to keep going slowly and remind you how this count of degrees of freedom works in the usual ADS-CFT cases. So there is a notion of entropy just as a function of energy in the field theory that we can study, and that was discussed in the duality by Susskind and Witten, basically applying the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy bound to a region of the gravity side which corresponds to putting a UV cutoff on the field theory side. So if we consider a cutoff on the field theory side that allows each degree of freedom to be excited once per ADS area, so take this parameter delta to be of order one, somewhat less than one for control, but roughly of order one, then that cutoff on the CFT corresponds to, you can say it in two ways, a region of the gravity side with an infrared cutoff corresponding to a d minus 2 sphere of area given by the ADS radius scale. Or another way to say it is if it's a black hole of this mass corresponding to the energy scale that we had on the CFT side. So that energy scale on the CFT side is the number of independent degrees of freedom we can excite times this cutoff scale that we introduced for each degree of freedom, which is, again, this ADS radius scale. So the simple thing that works in the usual case is that the answer to both these questions is n squared. The number of CFT degrees of freedom is of order n squared. This didn't actually have to work. It's even true in the strong coupling regime where we wouldn't have known it, strictly speaking. And this area in Planck units also goes like n squared. So what they showed is that everything works nicely. We apply the UVIR relation, and we find the right entropy from the field theory side point of view. And furthermore, this one per Planck area on this sphere are seen to be organized really as n CFT, or n squared in this case, degrees of freedom per ADS area. So I've been talking about using the Coulomb branch, and so we can apply this analysis out there. On the field theory side, that means lifting most of the degrees of freedom of order n squared of the degrees of freedom, or in general of order n CFT of the degrees of freedom, to the scale of the BEV. So below that scale, we have a much suppressed density of states as a function of energy, and then we hit the scale of the BEV, which on the gravity side corresponds to the scale of the brains, above which we have the usual ADS continuum of density of states that goes like e to the some constant times the number of degrees of freedom. So out on the Coulomb branch, if we look at states living on the brain whose energy scale is at the scale of the BEV, we see n squared of them in front of our face. And so it's in that sense that I was saying that going out onto the Coulomb branch manifests the degrees of freedom of the system. So this is something that we can do in our case. The previous slide required knowledge a priori of the field theory. So the question is...
Excuse me.
Yeah, actually.
Before you go on, so if you were at very high energy or very far out, there'd be no difference between these pictures, right?
If you were, say it again. So.
Okay. If you were looking at spheres that are far away from the brain.
Yeah.
Right. Or that would.
So that would be somewhere up here in the spectrum.
So that's exactly the same as before.
Then it'd be the same as before, exactly.
Okay. So now you come down to the level of the brain.
Yeah.
And this is some spherical distribution of brains that you're.
That's right. So in the usual ADS5 times S5 case, I should have said there's this nice solution of Krauss, Larson, and Trivedi. I said it over here. So here's another picture of the same thing. So it's here's the radial direction, and here's the S5 direction. So outside of the brains, everything's like usual. The fluxes are stabilizing the S5 at some value, which is the same scale as the ADS radius. Then the brains come along, and it's as far as you can do it, large and limit spherically symmetric shell of them. Inside, or to the left of them in this picture, the flux is no longer there. It's not stabilizing the sphere, and it caps off, and it turns out to cap off in this nice, simple, flat way in that case. Okay, so we can look at these stretched strings that are at the scale of the VEV here, and we find these n squared states. Okay. So that leads us to the question of whether the brain degrees of freedom in the more generic flux compactification, the flux compactifications on these collabials that we want to study, can the brain degrees of freedom account for the entropy in that case? And my ultimate answer is going to be yes by a concrete but somewhat rough estimate. But let me first say why you might expect it, which I've sort of already said, and then a puzzle that we had, and then I'll explain how it actually works. So the idea is what I've just outlined, really. It's to do the procedure that I just reviewed, trade the flux for brains in the infrared region of the solution. We expect the solution to get capped off in the IR, and to only cross over from a density of states that's much smaller than the CFT density of states to the CFT density of states at the scale of the VEV associated with the brains and the solution. So that seems like it should work. On the other hand, there's a puzzle that we had for quite a while, which was based on the fact that we know from the Busso-Palchinsky mechanism in this set of vacua, which I'll review, that we expect to be able to get extremely large entropies in both the ADS and DS cases, which scale with flux quantum numbers, as I will review, in a way that can be as large, it seems, as some huge power of the flux quantum numbers Q, like we'll talk about collabials with B3 three cycles, and there will be an estimate that roughly says that the entropy can be at least as large as this Q to the 2B3 power. And if you think that brains always have just Q squared degrees of freedom, then this seems like it can never work, except when we don't make this kind of tuning, we take the ADS or DS scale to be of order string scale, at which point we find a correspondence point limit where it does work. So we observe this immediately, but we're bothered by the fact that it seemed like it couldn't work generally. As an aside, it can work generally if you allow each degree of freedom to be excited more finely than one per ADS radius area scale. That was a thing that I emphasized about the distribution in the Susskind-Witten analysis. So there's a numerology that would work if you assembled Q squared degrees of freedom more finely. But really, the Susskind-Witten analysis says that they ought to be distributed one per ADS radius area scale, and at least in the ADS case.
You were counting numbers of vacua, and you're counting numbers of states. Scale differently with the volume,
Probably should have done it in this order, but I'm just saying, you count some number of vacua. Let's say that they're distributed between minus Planck scale and cosmological constant. And I'm just going to say they're distributed randomly because I really have no idea. So the number of vacua that you predict as really done in the KKLT models. I will translate into a rough prediction for the smallest cosmological constant that we should get, which will go like, you know, 1 over L4 squared times the number of vacua, which suggests that the entropy that we should be able to get would scale like the number of vacua. So in this sense, you really can relate the statistics of vacua to the statistical mechanics of an individual vacuum, with the caveat that I am making an assumption that they're distributed randomly. So
this should mean when you see that you can get this maximal entropy, you should also see some set of assumptions that would let you get rid of most of it, because most of the vacua that you'll get sort of coarsely would have much higher lambda. Positive one, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly are. There's a lot more you could do with seeing what fraction of them look like they have this many degrees of freedom and what don't, and so on. And that will be a more detailed study than what I'll present here. I'll just show, because this puzzle bothered us so much, it seemed very far from working, just exhibiting that we can get that many degrees of freedom in such a system will be all that I accomplished today. But that is the next step, would be what you, of course, the kind of thing you said. Okay, so those were the kind of heuristic puzzles, and now here's the rough estimate from the Coulomb branch of the actual systems that we're talking about. So let's talk about the KKLT system, which Steve reviewed yesterday so nicely. So I will, I'm essentially reproducing one of the pictures he drew, but adding to it my brains, which I've traded for the flux to the IR. I'm doing the ADS case and studying the situation where I've introduced the brains that replace the flux to the left side of this geometry, which is the IR side from the putative dualist field theory point of view. So in this context, remember that the KKLT models have three-form fluxes, NS fluxes, and Ramon fluxes. So these orange circles are meant to represent the corresponding NS5 brains and D5 brains wrapping three cycles dual to the cycle that contains that flux. And since they can wrap the same cycles, really the whole thing reduces to B3 sets of PQ 5-brain bound states. So that's the 5-brain content of this theory. I've also drawn these purple lines extending from the 5-brains because of Gauss's law, which it turns out in this situation gets a contribution from the fluxes. So in other words, 3-brains can extend in the 4 dimensions and be point-like in the Calabi-Yau dimensions. So that gives a source of 3-brain charge to Gauss's, and there's a corresponding Gauss's law constraint. But it turns out that fluxes also contribute to that. And so there's a relation like this that applies. What that means is that if we have some flux generically, that we've now traded for brains, we have to cancel the, okay, there's a contribution also to the 3-brain charge from Orienta folds, which I quickly explained contributed an important part to the potential. So there's some Orienta fold contribution, which we'll label by chi, which corresponds to a geometrical setup that applies here, which in the flux compactification is canceled completely by this combination of NS and Ramon fluxes. So when we replace all those fluxes by brains, something has to come along and cancel that charge, and that's why I've drawn these 3 brains ending on these sets of dual NS and Ramon's 5 brains. Okay, so that's the brain content in these theories, and we want to see what the number of degrees of freedom is on these brains. And we want to look at those degrees of freedom.
So the 3 brains end on 3 cycles and extend in the radial direction?
That's right, extend toward what used to be the ADS horizon in the radial direction. And we presume that the solution caps off, although I don't know what it is in detail.
And are you putting the 5 brains or not?
Oh, yes, the 5 brains are there. The 3 brains ending on the 3 cycles, what I mean by that is they end on the 5 brains, which are wrapping those 3 cycles. Yeah.
You don't have to confuse what system, or ADS4 plus Clavio, or what are we doing?
Yeah, sorry, we're doing ADS4 times Clavio. Those examples of the KKLT.
Those
same
KKLT.
Okay.
Maybe if you continue along that remedial line. So what should I think about is creating the boundary field theory, the 3 brain bending on something, or?
Creating the boundary field theory. So
there should be 2 plus 1 dimensional boundary field theory.
Right. So it would be okay. So these 5 brains are wrapping 3 cycles. So they're 2 plus 1 dimensional.
So that's where the
field theory.
Okay. So you're going to give us a guess for what the degrees of freedom in that field theory are.
That's right. That's right. Okay, sorry, it's clear I've been rather unclear. Are there any?
Don't judge my joke.
Any other questions? Okay. Okay, so we want to know how many degrees of freedom are on this slightly more complicated set of brains that appears in the Calabi-Yau examples. And first of all, what's the scale of the VEV that we would expect? Well, remember in this case, the puzzle comes when we consider this highly tuned situation where the Calabi-Yau is roughly string scale and the ADS is humongous. So as opposed to that picture I showed you of the ADS 5 times S5 case, where the scale of the compactification was the same size as the scale of the ADS. Here, it's not, even though I've drawn it bigger on that picture.
More on the remedial. So you have an ADS. How do you get ADS on Clavio? I mean, what are you turned on?
So
Clavio would be flat, so you need some stuff to be.
Well, the Clavio would only gives you flat if you've ignored quantum correction. So,
okay, so this is where you've included Roshi's instant time to give you a negative something like that. So it's not supersymmetric.
No, it can be supersymmetric.
Generically,
once you add any correction that depends on the radius, you can solve all the supersymmetric conditions we mentioned.
Oh, okay. So these are the Roshi instant times.
This generically has a solution now that there's rho depends in the super potential.
So this is the situation before adding that explicit breaking term?
That anti-brain?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about that too. But okay, I'm really sorry if this is unclear. It's really pretty simple.
And the flux isn't like ADS 5 versus where you can increase it arbitrarily. It's got some upper limit or.
Well, nobody really knows. You could talk to Greg about that. most people assume that, and when I try to explain your estimate a little more, I will assume that. But it could be. It's a conservative assumption. Okay, so let me just get to this count that I'm interested in. So what is the scale of the VEV that we would be looking for? Well, now the Calabi-Yau. Let's say that we make all the cycles of the Calabi-Yau somewhat bigger than string scale to have control, which we expect to be able to tune to do, but not much bigger, so roughly their string scale. So the size of the Calabi-Yau, the mass scale that entails is B3 times the string scale. And at that scale, we have states ending on these PQ 5 brains and 3 brains coming from string junctions and string webs. And if you consider the most elementary such junctions, which have one endpoint on each bunch of brains, which can be therefore an electric quantum number in each of the UN gauge groups associated with this, each set of brains, then one obtains an estimate like the Buzo-Polchinski estimate that I mentioned. So basically, the way it happens is that for the 3 brains, they're associated with H wedge F, so they were roughly B3 over 2, if we have B3 3 cycles or B3 over 2 bunches of 3 brains with H wedge F, this quantity L is H wedge F integrated over the Calabi-Yau. We have, you know, per bunch, then we have that L divided by this number of bunches, B3 over 2. For the five brains, one has similarly a total number N5 of five brains, and B3, number of three cycles, bunches of five brains. One can relate this number of five brains to H wedge F by in solutions of the equations of motion by using the no-scale structure that Steve reviewed yesterday. Maybe I shouldn't go through the details here, but I can explain to anyone who wants to know. So the why don't I actually explain it? So the number of five brains can be as big as half the total number of NS and D five brains, since they reduce to PQ bound states. This is the order of five brains that we can obtain. And so if we have of order N5 over B3 such quantum number for each such quantum number, we can then relate that to N5, because it's just then N5 over B3, in the solutions to the equations of motion, there's a relation between H wedge F, which was a source of charge and tension, canceling against another source of charge and tension coming from the flux terms in the energy. And that allows us to relate these five brain quantum numbers to the number of, to the H wedge F, this quantity L. So putting that together gives us a relation between the number of five brains and this quantity L.
So is this valid after you included that Michael-Durkee correction as well?
This is kind of independent of that. The role that the radial modulus will play in this putative dual theory is very subtle. We don't understand it yet. But this content is related to the Ramon-Ramon and NS fluxes, which are part of the classical Lagrangian that fixes the complex structure in Dillaton moduli. So we can already study this brain system independently of the physics of the radial modulus in terms of counting these degrees of freedom.
I'm going to try to understand. So right now, until you tell us one more constraint, the number of five brains can be infinite.
And then you're going to have to tell us some constraint that bounds the norm of Q and the norm of N.
Yeah. So right now I'm just saying whatever L is, let's say it's something finite, then we get this estimate. So the end result of this was that we had a string web ending on bunches of brains, the three brain contribution with L over B3 roughly, ways to end per B3 over two bunches gives us this factor. A similar factor for the five brains gives us a total estimate of L, which is again integral H wedge F over B3 to the B3 power. Okay, so this.
So remind us, what was L, the definition
of L? Okay, I won't give you the prefactor because I don't know it.
Just H wedge F?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm.
So that part is
it's a new but reasonable assumption that the H wedge F bounds Q squared plus N squared, whereas that thing is actually indefinite.
I'm going to get to that, and you know the answer very well. So
this L was not the radius of the area?
No, I'm sorry. It's really bad notation. I'm using Douglas's notation. Okay, so all right. So that was the junction the estimate of degrees of freedom on the brain. We saw that we could get this large power of flux quantum numbers.
I have another very vague question. Sorry. Okay. So the answer turned out to be just N3 times N5. So I'm wondering why you need webs and not strings. I mean, if all the three brains were somehow on top of each other and all the five brains were on top of each other, the string.
Well, then you'd only get pairs, so you would get, you know, N squared, NQ, and Q squared at the best. If you had, say, three types of brains. You'd get things that were quadratic.
And the numbers of brains.
So you'd get something like B3 N squared, roughly speaking. So the puzzle was, if you were too naive, you would say that you just have those strings, but at this energy scale, you really have all these webs. I think the real question here, which I should emphasize, is that I'm not completely clear on why there couldn't be larger webs, which would be bound states of these lower ones, but could, you know, potentially also fit into this approximate energy scale. These are the only ones that are obvious and completely controlled, but this estimate has to be regarded as a lower bound in our case. And as I'll say in a minute, the estimate on the gravity side, most people also view as a lower bound.
Can I clarify Gary's question also? If you go back to the previous transparency, the M3 and M5 you have there are not the number of free reigns and five reigns. They're numbers of degrees of freedom on free reigns and five reigns.
Which are what?
That's how I interpreted her answer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Another bad notation. Okay.
This number you want to relate to the entropy of the anti de Sitter eventually?
That's right, for the reasons I explained at the beginning.
The value, for example, of the entropy of the anti de Sitter depends on that non-perturbative correction that you want to introduce, because before that, you were not anti de Sitter.
That's right, but the question was, can you ever find that many degrees of freedom on the set of brains that correspond to a Coulomb branch of this setup?
Because you
puzzle.
Said at the beginning that this would not be.
Yeah, and so now you can do what you're asking the same question that was asked before. Can you go further and actually show that in precisely the models where you get these junctions, those are the models which correspond to the highly tuned ADS vacuum? And that I certainly haven't done. But I think we learned a lot just from this estimate. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was a medium or not. You can tell me. But, so now in terms of the boundary field theory,
uh-huh.
I guess it's a field theory at this point. So 2 plus 1 dimensional Lagrangian, maybe it's a Lagrangian. Are there fields with like very complicated multi-index transformation properties? Is that what these? Or are you supposed to be thought of as
bound states?
I mean, what is
I'm not completely sure. That's at this energy scale, I think they can be regarded as elementary. They
so
plausibly go down to zero mass as you.
Quiver-like thing with like matter fields transforming under whatever it is, little b worth of h fields.
Yeah, it's.
So you have 67 cycles that you're having these five brains over, and each one is like a factor of a very complicated gauge group.
Yeah.
And then you have some matter field that transforms under each of the 67 gauge groups.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Sort of
yeah. It's complicated, but.
Well, yeah,
it's whatever the.
Spider web or something.
That's right. Okay. All right, so let me explain this gravity side thing that probably only the experts followed from the previous discussion. So that. The idea is that these flux compactifications lead to many vacua because you can vary the flux quantum numbers. But a priori, we pretty much know that under current technology, at least, we lose control if these flux quantum numbers get arbitrarily large. So let's just quantify that by saying none of them can get squared, can get larger than some parameter r max squared. And let's quantify that with some quadratic condition like this with order one coefficients. R max here is chosen so that nothing gets out of control, and actually let's choose it even more strongly so that no moduli take extreme values at all. So we're just considering a situation in the bulk of moduli space. All right, so then if each choice of flux gives us roughly order one vacua, then that produces an estimate of a number of vacua, which is just the volume of that sphere, which goes like, you know, R max to the 2 B3 over B3 factorial, because B3 is the dimension of the space of fluxes. 2 B3 is the dimension of the space of fluxes, because we have both NS and Ramon. Now, we want to relate that to this quantity L. So we can do that for every solution of the equations of motion, because in the vacua that we get from these flux compactifications, there is this BPS condition relating H wedge F to the positive contributions to the potential that roughly takes this form coming from the fluxes. So the physics that fixes the complex structure moduli at each point on at each point solving the equations has a property that L, this H wedge F, is a border R squared because all the moduli are order one and all these coefficients are order one. So we can trade this R max for L max, at which point we can just rewrite the estimate as L max over B3 to the B3 up to factors that we're not resolving anyway in this analysis. So this is a naive estimate that many people, starting from Bissell-Polchinski, including Shamit, and then in a more ambitious paper of Ashok and Douglas, have come to. In fact, Ashok and Douglas tried to kind of integrate over all solutions, and they found an answer that leads to this same scaling with more specific coefficients here.
Did they actually calculate n or an index?
That's right. It was an index of supersymmetric solutions, which would only count. That's right. So in that sense, it's a lower bound. And also, Greg's been saying, why are they integrating? The vacua are actually dense in some way of looking at, well, I shouldn't speak for Greg, but he has an estimate which is quite different from this, which he may tell us about.
What do you mean, dense?
Go ahead.
Preliminary result is that in some examples, you might have a dense set of flux factor and a compact region.
Maybe they have an
maybe not. Point? Maybe okay. It's not obviously susceptible.
By dense, you don't mean
preliminary.
You don't mean continuous.
Like rational numbers.
Greg, is that true for supersymmetric vacua or for vacua that could have zero repeats?
So that would
then we're looking at the case where you have no tree levels.
Well, that certainly makes things harder, but I don't see any reason why it couldn't happen.
And what is the feeling about the relationship between the index and the number?
Actually, I'll get to that also in a second. Short answer is I don't know, but there are many more vacua than that index counts. So I'll say something about that too. All right, so as I explained before, what we're doing is relating the entropy of the largest radius ADS space that we can obtain this way based on the random assumption that the vacua that we estimate this way are distributed uniformly between plus and minus Planck scale or okay, we don't know, but I think it would be kind of, this is the conservative assumption at this point. And it gives us a nice agreement, I would say, between the two estimates. But as I emphasize, I think, strictly speaking, we can have to regard it as a lower bound on both sides. Yeah.
I guess you explained it, but I still would love to have another one.
Okay.
You explained in an answer to Joe's question, what is the relationship between the entropy of the state in
the So you have a number of vacua that you estimate this way. Let's distribute them uniformly. That's a random assumption that I think is the conservative one, though we may find some much different distribution when we look at it. But I'm assuming that we distribute them uniformly between Planck scale and zero. Okay, so that predicts that gives an estimate for the minimum cosmological constant we find in this discrete room. Invert that to get the corresponding entropy, which is.
Well, that's the De Sitter entropy.
No. It's also the ADS entropy in the Susskind-Witten type analysis. Okay. So in the remember.
So this is like an estimate for the difference between energy levels within different states.
This is okay. So we get an estimate for the minimum. Sorry, I should really be doing this for the ADS case. Okay.
Which is the home of
Africa. Yeah, well, it's just. Well, I tried to go carefully through the Susskind-Witten analysis where you saw that you predict if you have n, let's say, little n degrees of freedom in the CFT, you predict a cutoff in which each of those is excited once per ADS scale gives the correct, let's do it in terms of energies, it gives the mass of a black hole in a sphere of area whose horizon has area L ADS. Okay. So the UVIR connection, it was just the screen. Okay. Makes this prediction. It says that the degrees of freedom should each be excited once. I did this in terms of energies, but if you do it in terms of entropy, it predicts that you should see, each degree of freedom excited once per ADS area, and that's why for both the ADS and DS cases we get a prediction for an entropy corresponding to each vacuum. And what I was doing is taking the number of vacua, dividing by the interval minus 1 over L, 4 squared, and 0, and getting a prediction, therefore, for the minimum value of the cosmological constant, which corresponds to a maximum entropy that you should be able to get.
Okay. Of course, it's a little dangerous. So given a distribution level which is sort of random, to make an argument about the smallest space.
Yeah, I don't think in the end it will be necessarily the smallest, but we should be worried if we can't explain, at least this, something of that order. And the worry was something of this order looked wildly off from the kind of naive Q-squared estimate.
As big as that order.
Yeah, exactly. But this simple count of the webs that actually exist in the brains that are actually there in the background agrees with this. And so I find this comparison very promising, very interesting, and it motivates us to really pursue this brain system as a strong clue for what the dual theories contain on their Coulomb branch. Okay, so this is just kind of an aside, but it's related to a question that David asked a minute ago, which is, just counting, say, solutions to dW equals 0, even weighted by some signs in an index computation, is not ultimately what you want. Relatedly, there are many more vacua than people have considered even in the KKLT system. In particular, I think something I'm working on with two students, I think that there is a way to obtain the Sitter KKLT solutions without the antibrain. So the idea is simple. At the level of the no-scale theory that, again, Steve explained yesterday, one has a cosmological term which is a positive definite expression of this sort, and these guys quite reasonably considered the solution where dW was 0 for all these terms. But then later in the KKLT construction, they find use for a contribution to the potential from antibrains, which scales with the overall radius superfield, like 1 over rho cubed. And in fact, if you looked at this potential and studied metastable minima of this no-scale potential in the directions corresponding to the complex structure and dilaton, one would find examples where that leads to a tadpole for rho that's of the same scale as the antibrain that one adds later anyway in the KKLT construction. So if we consider solutions of the complex structure and Dilaton equations of motion in at the level of the no-scale model, which have positive cosmological constant that can play the same role as the anti-brain in the construction. And we have some preliminary examples of that. So
those are also at large
ranges. They have the same properties and liabilities that the usual KKLT has. The way we, okay, I guess you're asking, they had a way of tuning this to be small by warping. Yeah, exactly. So in these cases, the potential looks rich enough that you can again find vacua that are rather low in cosmological constant. And this is so far just being done by essentially a computer search. So there are some preliminary examples of this. And okay. So that's kind of an aside. All right, so I explained this entropy comparison. In the ADS case, where we really know the dictionary, we really knew the degrees of freedom needed to be distributed, each of them one per ADS area. But if we go back to DS, we also have an entropy prediction, and we can, and the same counting that I did for the ADS case applies also to the DS case. If one considers the observations made by what we call the static observer, that is somebody who counts the entropy on the horizon, taking into account the fact that the cutoff effectively redshifts down towards zero as you go to the horizon, so these junction states become excitable. And if the cutoff is of order string scale, then it's plausible that those states matter in the canonical ensemble appropriate to this de Sitter observer. And we can, at that level, also explain the entropy by the D brains, or excuse me, in this case, D brains and NS brains and the junctions on them. Okay. All right, so then question two was, what is the content and dynamics of the dual theory? So this is very much in progress. There, as you can see, it's complicated. I take this entropy comparison as strong evidence that we're on the right track. But then what we want to do is really understand precisely what is the theory. So as Steve was saying, we have a structure like what I've written here, where there's a bunch of UN factors, these coming from the PQ5 brains and this coming from the sets of three brains that I explained. We have got strings and junctions, which give us this complicated spectrum of generally multi-fundamentals. We are still working out the couplings and the including the potential that is no doubt induced on the Coulomb branch. Well, as I explained, these lowest junctions with of order one end on each bunch of brains were at the right scale to.
And they're stable by quantum numbers?
They're stable by quantum numbers.
I see. So those might really be fundamental.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to prove that. No. But that, yeah.
That's true. But that sort of tells you what the natural set of fields to maybe look at.
That's right. Well, there's the energy scale and their quantum numbers. And the fact that this entropy comparison works.
So what is the microscopic description of these multi-fundamentals?
Well, they're multi-fundamentals. I mean, that.
No. What's stretching between what?
Oh, what is? Oh, sorry. they're. So we have this Calabi-Yau with these brains wrapped in all these ways on it. So it's just string webs. So you can have, you can have three string junctions, which combine with other three string junctions to form webs. And I'm looking at things which have of order one endpoint on each bunch of brains. So microscopically, it's that type of object. There are some constraints. There's an overall.
Why aren't they heavy?
So we're looking at these compactifications which are highly tuned. So it's the size of the Calabi-Yau is of order B3 times L string. And let's say G string is also not anomalously small. It's of order 1 or maybe 1 over Q or something. So So by the way, in the usual S5 times ADS5 case, the things are also heavy.
Those are, I mean, they have their combinations of D1s and
F1s. Yes, they are, but again, yeah, that's right, yeah. They're not stretching very far in this case, absolutely, yeah. So the same thing would not happen in the usual case. That's why we didn't need to consider junctions in the usual case. That and the fact that in that case, we know they're not really elementary as you go to zero. Okay.
Why aren't they similar by quantum numbers in the ordinary case?
Well, I think they are, but it's like with monopoles, they get big as you go to zero energy, so they're not really elementary. I don't know if that's... Yeah, but also they're just wildly at the wrong energy scale,
right.
As well. So
yeah, they should fall into something else, but I'm just trying to see
where they go.
Yeah. Aren't there KDLT vacuum G string quite small?
There are.
So could you try to do one of those?
Yeah. Okay. Good. No, that's a good question. If we do also have G string small, do we also get this hierarchy of cosmological constant? Then do we need to explain that entropy? That's a good question. All I've done is exhibit that there are vacua with that much entropy. That this L to the B3 entropy. I haven't sliced it in any other way.
Yeah. A question to be resolved. It's small G string.
Well, there's lots of questions to be resolved about whether it's, you know, about which vacua go along with which set of brains and junctions. I mean,
and I think you have proved here, if we trust these are stable for charge reasons, that all the vacua have very high entropy, but a lot of them have cosmological constants.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you know, these junctions have some conditions on them. The P's and Q's may not line up, in many cases and so on. It's clear that there are cases where they do line up and where you do get this counting. It's not clear that it's generic. It's not, but that I think it's very interesting. I think this ultimately could enable us to translate these questions of classifying the vacua to classifying the dual field theory contents and so on. But so these are all excellent questions.
Why expect to be able to describe this by field theory?
Because let's consider the ADS case. Then we're almost sure of that because of the ADS-CFT dictionary that relates, Feynman diagrams in ADS to Green's functions conformal.
There are a finite number of these functions?
There's a finite number at this mass scale corresponding to the VEV. Just like here, you could have said there's an infinite number of states, and that's true. A field theory has an infinite number of states, but at a given energy scale, so we calculate the density of states as a function of energy, and at this energy scale, we should see the degrees of freedom of the theory. So,
I just wanted to ask if in those small G strings would correspond to low entropy states.
Small G string. Well, that's what Greg was suggesting. But really, for that to be true, G string would have to be really small, one over Q to the B3, which may happen. I don't know. I mean, there's a whole range of possibilities. So I don't know what you meant by small.
Like 1/100.
Oh, okay. it's a good question. Let me just continue. All right, so that's the main definite result to present, but I want to explain why, although it's complicated, we think that we should be able to make progress on really identifying the duals, or at least testing the statement that this content corresponds to the dual out on its Coulomb branch. So there are lots of other things to check. For example, the relation between fixing of moduli on the gravity side and zeros of beta functions on the field theory side should hold here as a normal ADS-CFT. And here there's a rich structure of couplings coming from these wrapped fibrains, which relate to the complex structure moduli and the dilaton, which get fixed by these simple equations on the gravity side. And one can sort of see a relation between the field equations on the gravity side and beta function equations on the field theory side. in particular, in the ADS case, we really should see what may be called a discretum of three-dimensional field theory, CFTs. And in fact, if you work in a perturbative regime, which would therefore have to correspond to a very small radius regime of ADS, there is such a discretum from the well-known sort of large NF expansion that one can do in perturbative field theories to find fixed points. For example, just in three-dimensional QED, people like Alpaquist and friends did analogs of the fixed points people studied in four dimensions at large flavor number, where the tree-level couplings are driven strong, but if you have enough flavors, the loop effect goes the other way, and you can find fixed points whose effective coupling scales, like in our context, something like 1 over flux quantum numbers Q or 1 over brain quantum numbers Q. This relation is actually interesting if you just think about the way the dilaton is fixed in flux compactifications. If we go to a regime where the D-brain content is perturbative and dominates, which is taking the Ramon flux quantum numbers large, then if you just study the structure of the dilaton potential, you find that G-string gets minimized at a scale of order NS quantum number over D brain quantum number, and if the latter is taken large, then we get a scaling that mirrors that we find in this perturbative type of analysis on the field theory side. The weak strong coupling duality, so this doesn't yet, prove such a correspondence, but in the four-dimensional case, this type of fixed point did extend into the strong coupling region, and one can hope that the same thing happens here, and I think it's likely from the existence of the gravity side discretum. Okay, but we really do want to understand the strong coupling limit. There are other structures there, like monodromes. What do they mean for the CFTs? What is the meaning of the Gauss's law constraint in the CFTs, if anything? There's a simpler problem that one can study, which we may retreat to first, which is basically like focusing in on a pair of dual cycles of the Calabi-Yau and just studying an S3 times S3 times ADS4 compactification of type 2B, which we have a solution like this with Ramon and NS flux and three brains ending on, or space filling three brains, that is more like a traditional ADS CFT duality from a S3 times S3 based conical geometry, but has some similarities to the problem we're studying. So that's another concrete avenue here. Okay, I wanted to make some speculative comments about the DS case if there's time, but if there's not, I can stop. Okay, that's about right. Okay, so then, so if this all, goes through as I outlined, then, ultimately we'd like to know what kinds of things we could say about the De Sitter case. Now, in the De Sitter case, we can still use the strategy of going out onto the Coulomb branch. And in this paper with Bobinger, we studied the geometry and thermodynamics and causal structure of that deformation in the De Sitter flux models. The results are kind of summarized here. I already kind of mentioned this geometry, and we found that there's a well-defined temperature on the brains, even though they connect different De Sitter spaces because of acceleration and Rindler temperature contributions to the temperature. And one can study, for example, what happens to the De Sitter causal patch, starting from various different observers as you introduce the brains exhibiting the Coulomb branch of the system. So those new causal patches for three representative observers are drawn here, including one that I'll emphasize, which is called O sub S because it has a static causal patch. A static coordinate system on its causal path. So for this guy, who has a static coordinate system basically because he stays a fixed proper distance from the brains in the appropriate spatial slicing. The D brains look like they're coming out of the horizon, and we can take them out to kind of materialize something like a stretched horizon, and that to us suggests a kind of regulated picture of the old idea that one could have open strings ending on the horizon. So the geometry of this is suggestive of some sort of D-brain interpretation of the horizon, where perhaps it, bringing in the D-brains produces a regularization of that statement. And as we saw, the entropy works. Yeah.
What's the limit when the D-brains approach the horizon?
So the limit is, you see, so this is a spatial slice. So patch-wise, you see that the D-brains approach the horizon, and they do so for all time over each one over a patch of space. So that's the geometry.
There's some parameter that you're changing.
Oh, you mean how do you change that? Yeah, so you have to, there's the cosmological constant on the other side, there's the tension of the brain, which is some charge times some area. There's it's things like that. Yeah, that's right. So this is, this is all true. The speculation is that it means that maybe there could be some sort of open string theory or maybe even low energy field theory associated to that, associated to the horizon. Now, here comes just the kind of speculative arguments. You might object to this idea because you might say that don't the dual degrees of freedom need to really live at the boundary, like in ADS-CFT? And I would say not necessarily. First of all, the dual doesn't live anywhere. It's dual to the whole system. And the question is how we define observables. Do they have to be injected in from the boundary? And I would say, again, not even in ADS-CFT is that really true. If you look at the Poincaré patch, which is dual to a complete field theory problem, one on flat space, then there are processes which on the gravity side consist of off-shell modes entering the horizon. So that has to make sense because field theory on flat space makes sense. And I think we even can see an outline of how to do it, which is to use the fact that we know that these off-shell modes, which relate to the fluctuations of the horizon in the case of gravitons, you might normally think couldn't be described by string theory, which is an S-matrix theory, et cetera. But we know that D-brains can perfectly well inject off-shell closed string modes into the bulk of space-time, even if they're sitting at a finite point, in a way we understand completely consistently with world GBRST invariants and so on. One has a boundary state that's BRST invariant, but the closed string state it produces by propagation is not, and this is fine. So it seems to me like there's ample room for a D-brain-like interpretation of the horizon, though this is just words until we really do it in this null case and so on. So, so I think that's definitely an open possibility, and it may not even be mutually exclusive to the kind of more global meta-observer DSCFT type ideas that people have explored. Anyway, in general, let me conclude by saying that I think these flux models and the related brain systems are likely to guide us toward the right dictionary.
Let's see, so this comment about injecting things from the horizon.
Yeah.
In the Poincaré patch, you're really still coming in from infinity. Right?
Well, I think that there should be a complete description of this geodesically incomplete space, which is just the Poincaré patch. You may be able to formally describe it also by processes coming in from the boundary, but there should be a way to just keep track of the stuff in the Poincaré patch, because that's all that the Poincaré observer sees.
But I would say something coming from the inside of the bound of the horizon is a normalizable mode. We propagate it in a little bit further. Mm-hmm. You just have a nice localized, normalizable excitation in ADS, which will be describable by some state. It's, mm-hmm. it's, so that's just a non-trivial state in the field theory.
Right. I'm just saying it's not. I completely agree that we understand what it is in the field theory. I think there's still a open problem of specifying what it is on the gravity side, just making reference to the Poincaré patch. And I think that should be possible along these lines. And I think that would be then a toy model for the de Sitter causal patch, where you don't even have a boundary, but you might think about things being injected in from the horizon.
Thank you.